Tonight's shiur, Parshas Shoftim, it's also Lerfua Shlema for Yaakov Zev ben Nechama, Pesach Shar Chol Yisrael. Mishpat Tzedek, there's a maisa by the Talmud Chacham, that his mother was renting an apartment from the yeshiva. What happened was the yeshiva had built a number of apartments for investment purposes, to make some money for the yeshiva, and they were rented out on a program which is called Domain Mafteach, which is key money. So it's a certain agreement whereby the renter pays a relatively low rent, and the deal is that if the renter ever has a right to sell the apartment, when the renter sells the apartment, the renter takes one third of the money, and the yeshiva, which is the owner of the apartment, takes two thirds. Another part of the agreement is that if the renter dies, then the whole apartment goes over to the owner, to the yeshiva in this case. Okay. So we have this man, and his mother was renting this apartment from the yeshiva for many years. And they decided to sell it. An older lady, whatever, decided to sell the apartment. So he went to the yeshiva office and told them they wanted to sell, which would mean that he would get a third, yeshiva gets two thirds, we said. So the minhal, whatever, in the office said, listen, it's not a good time, it's Bena's money now, whatever. It's not, come back later, come back another time, we'll deal with it. So fine. So a couple of weeks later, whatever, the son came again and to arrange things. And again, he was pushed off. It's not a good time. We're busy here still. We'll come back later. Okay. Unfortunately, though, it wasn't later, because a couple of days later, his mother was nifteret. So now came the shaila. So we said before that part of the agreement is the person that's renting dies, and the whole apartment goes over to the yeshiva, which is what happened over here, right, that the woman died. However, the son claimed, but I'd come to the yeshiva a couple of times. I wanted to already, you know, while she was still alive, I wanted to sell it. But they pushed me off. I'm busy here, busy there. And I would have sold it before she died. And then I would have gotten a third of the apartment, right? It's just that they were too busy. Yeah, they pushed me off. Obviously a good shaila. So they brought it to Beis Din to see who wins. So the Beis Din paskened in favor of the yeshiva, which means that the whole apartment goes over to the yeshiva since the woman died and before it was sold, and that's the end of that. Now, why are we bringing this story? Bring the story to see what was the reaction of the son. What would our reaction be? Very upset. You know, upsetting. We wanted to sell it, we planned, we wanted to sell the yeshiva, and now he loses a third of the apartment, which is a lot of money. He's a man, he's a, you know, mishpacha, whatever, he could really use them. But what did this person do? He walked out of the Beis Din, and nonetheless, what does he do? He starts to dance and sing. He starts dancing and sing. He's all happy. So what is he happy about? Oh, Hashem, I went to Beis Din, that's what they decided, I accept it happily. This is what obviously is meant to be, this is what Allah wants, so I'm happy. That's how he accepted the news. The end of the story is that he didn't lose out, though, really. Why? Because, who knows, maybe because of this, but his son, who was a yeshiva bachar at the time, he, from that day on, he grew tremendously in Torah, and until he became a chashev talmid chacham himself. And who did he end up marrying? The Rosh Yeshiva's granddaughter. And he got an apartment with it in the heart of Bnei Brak. So here we have it. So the father didn't lose out. He lost an apartment. He gained an apartment for his son. Truth is, there's actually a source for the way this person had acted in the din. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Dav Zayin Amud Alf. It says over there, the Azumi Beidina Shakel Glima. If somebody leaves the Beis Din after they took away his coat because he lost the din or whatever, and he had to pay, so he didn't have any money, so they took away his coat. If that happens, Lizmar Zamer Belizel Beorcha, you should sing zemer. He should sing and go out. So Rashi says, why? Why should a person be happy? He lost a din. He got his coat taken away. So why should he be happy? So Rashi says, hoil vidanu oto din emes lo hifsid klum elegzela hotziu miyado. That's not called losing. Because since there was an emistic din over here, says Rashi, that's not called losing. It's called winning. Why? Because if it would not be an emistic din and he would have quote unquote won, it means he wouldn't have to pay, and the money really belonged to the other party. So it ends up being Zela. The other party really deserves it, and you didn't give it to him. So if I, quote-unquote, lost and gave the money to the other side, that's I should be happy, because otherwise I'd have Zela in my hand. I should be happy. Similarly, there's a Maisa with Reuven. Listen to this one. Reuven had a very very serious din Torah against Shimon. A lot of money was involved, whatever. So he wanted to do all his ishtadlus to win the case against Shimon. So what did Reuven do? He went to this certain Rav, this Hashif Rav, and he said, Rebbe, I have this very important din ahead of me and against Shimon. Can you do me a favor? Can you daven for me? And I'll pay you handsomely. I'll give you a lot of money. So Reuven paid the Rav a lot of money, and the Rav said, no problem, and I'll daven for you. Okay. So the din Torah came, Reuven against Shimon, and Reuven lost. Shimon won. Okay, it happened. So when they leave the Beis Din, all of a sudden, Reuven, he overhears Shimon taking out his cell phone, calling the Rav, happened to be the same Rav that he went to, and said, Rebbe, good news, I won. Thank you so much for davening for me. So Reuven's like, what? Davening for him? I paid the Rebbe, he should daven for me. He's davening for him. So came out that the Rav was davening for both of them. So Reuven, went to the Rav and said, Rebbe, it's a little bit sad here, Paul. I paid you money to daven for me. What are you davening also for Shimon? I mean, we can't both win, so how can you daven for both? So what's the answer? According to this Gemara, it's not a problem. Why? Because they both won. Right? Shimon won, okay, he got the money. But Reuven also won because if he saved himself from Geza. That's also called winning. So the Rav could daven for both, and they both won. The winner, the one that got the money, deserved the money. One had to lose the money, deserved to lose it, and therefore it wasn't over on Gezel, so they both won. Similar, interesting little maisef with Rav Yitzchak Mivolozhin. Once the Russian government, decreed very harsh gezeiras on the Jewish people in Russia. And they wanted to get Rav Yitzchak Mivolozhin to have a meeting with the king of Russia, the Tsar, in order to try to help to get rid of the gezeiras. So they were able to arrange such a meeting. And so Rav Yitzchak went to the king, and the king talked about this, talked about that. And then he said, I have a question for you, Rabbi. So he says, please. So he says, tell me something. Do you, Jewish people, do you daven for my welfare? I should be successful in my wars, etc. So he says, of course. He says, we have a special tefillah. It's called Hanosein Tshuva L'Malachim. Hashem who brings the salvation to the kings. It's a special tefillah. It's a printed tefillah. You daven for the king. So of course we daven for you. So he says, aha. I have another question. He says, the Jewish people live in Germany. So do they daven for their king? Pray for their king? So he says, yeah, of course. Of course they pray for their king. Yeah. So he said, so now I have a question. I don't understand. He says, you people daven for my welfare, for my success as the king of Russia, right? Now, if your God listens to you and I'm successful, so then the king of Germany, well, he's going to lose, right? Because I'm going to win. He's going to lose. But his people, the Jewish people in his country, prayed for his welfare. And if he wins and I lose, so then God's listening to them. So how does God listen to both? He doesn't listen to any. What's going on? So Yitzchak said afterwards, I was prepared for any question except for this one. He said, what do you answer? So he said, I had siyata d'shmaya, and Hashem sent me the following answer. He told the Tzar, he said, listen, he said, I mentioned to you that we say this tefillah, right, Hanosin Shu'al HaMalachim. So in that tefillah, there's a pasuk in Yeshayahu, that says, Hanosin b'yam derech u'b'mayim azim nativa. That Hashem places in the ocean a derech away, and in the mayim azim, in the strong waters, a nativa, a root in the waters. So he says, Zechura, we have a question here also, similar question. Says there's people are traveling in the yam, in the sea. Not everybody's traveling in the same direction. Those that are traveling from east to west, so they need the winds to blow them in direction to help them go toward the west. But there's people traveling from west to east, so they need the winds in the opposite direction to help them to go east. And so too, people going from north to south, south to north. There's people traveling in all directions. So if Hashem helps those in the sea, how does he help this one and that one when it's opposites? The winds go the opposite direction. Ella, what are you going to have to say? That Hashem somehow makes everything work out. Everybody gets to the right place where it's supposed to be. So that we say that in that field. It's the same thing over here. You ask, how could it be you? I'd be dubbing for you. Are they dubbing for their king? No, we're just like getting to see everything works out. So also here, somehow, our God makes everything work out. So the Tzar was amazed by the answer and he accepted it, and he said it was a supernatural answer, and everything worked out with the meaning for the favor of the Jews. Next, an interesting shaila, the Gabe Tzimmerim. Tzimmerim, these summer cottages. So the story goes like this. There was a fellow that he had owned five cottages that were in the shape of a chet, and in the middle was like a swimming pool, so it was very nice, you know. And he put it up for rental, you know, one summer. So somebody calls him and says following, says, we're a family of, you know, five married, you know, couples, brothers, siblings, whatever, and we'd like to rent all the five tzimmerim. Are they all available for this date? So he says, yeah, no problem. So he says, okay. So the person says, however, there's only one little problem here, a stipulation that we'd like to add, and that's the following. He says that the four for sure, not a shaila. He says, but the fifth tzimmer, the fifth cottage, is for one of the brothers, and there is a chance he's going to be called and he has to go to Chutz Laaretz for business or whatever. So we'd like to put as a part of the conditions of the deal that if he calls a month before the time, at least, gives you a month before the time we're supposed to come, then we're not charged for that, and we can back out. As long as we back out a month before. If it's less than that, you know, we understand, and top it a little. So, okay, the owner made a cheshbon, it's worth it for him, because if hopefully everything will work out, we'll get all five, and if not, okay, but at least he can, you know, it's very hard to, you know, rent them all out, and here he's got a good, you know. So he said, fine, he agreed with the deal. Okay, signed and sealed. What happens? Sure enough, the fifth brother has to go to Chutz Laaretz. And it was more than a month before. So he called and he said, you know, we'd like to, unfortunately my brother has to go, and we'd like to cancel that, the fifth one. And it's before a month, that was the deal. But, okay, what can he do? A deal's a deal. And that's it. A couple of weeks later, the brother, he all of a sudden got word that he doesn't have to go to Chutz Laaretz. So he wants to join the family again for the tzimmer. So what does he do? He calls up the owner of the tzimmer without saying who he is, anonymously, and says, oh, do you happen to have a tzimmer for rent? And he says, yeah, I have one left. Yeah, I happen to have one left. And he says, oh, just one left? You mean, who's the people in the other four? Playing dumb, you know. And the owner says, well, it's a family of four, you know, things, and so there's one. He goes, oh, it's a family. You know, I'm so happy because I'm going to be with this, you know, other, you know, the family, and you know, they're all one big thing, and me, us, it's just not going to, you know, it's not so great, you know. And so the ball, he understood the owner, you know, it's not so much a great situation, you know. So he said, I'll tell you what, you know, I'll rent it to you if you give me a discount. Because it's not such a good situation. No. So back and forth. So he agreed to rent him for half the price. So the shaila came up, is that okay to do? Because the maisa, he of course would have paid the regular price. It was his family. He was like pulling a fast one on the owner. That was the shaila. So, first of all, if he planned right from the beginning, you know, to pretend he's going to Chutz La'aretz and he really was in order to get it, okay, that's underhanded. That's cheating. That's not good. But the maisa, until at the end, everything was bitmimus. He really thought he was going. He canceled it, thinking he was going. And in the end, it happened to be that he wasn't going. All that happened without no. The only thing was how he approached the situation after that. So, istama, okay, whether it's the most yashir thing to do, probably not. But the maisa, strict letter of the law, the churid is it's okay. Why? Because anything for sale, right? How much is that thing worth? The thing is worth by what people out there in the market would pay for it. So the truth is, it probably is not going to be easy for him to sell at the, you know, rent out that last simmer, since his other four is the rest of the family, you know, for the regular price. He would have to discount it probably to half price. So that's the price out there for, okay, you'll say, yeah, but for this guy, he's willing to pay the regular price. For him, it's worth the full thing. I mean, it's his family. He was going to pay the full price. So he says that's true, but that's not how, halachically, we put a price tag on something. It doesn't go by what the buyer would pay for it. It goes by what it's worth in the market. He gives an example. He says, let's say somebody's walking by the store window, and he sees for sale an old antique Kiddush cup, okay, silver Kiddush cup, and it's a price tag 500 shekels. And the guy says, looks interesting. He looks closer, and he sees a name engraved, whatever, and he sees it's from his great-great-great-grandfather, right? And he goes, oh my gosh, you know, I got to get that. How much would he pay for that cup? About 5,000 shekels. I mean, for from his great-great-grandfather, you know, worth for him thousands of shekels. So, therefore, what? He has to tell the guy, look, it's 500 shekels, but I have to pay you 5,000 shekels because that's what it's worth for me. Of course not. Why? The price in the shuk is for your average person would pay 500 shekels for it. That's what it's worth. This is because for this particular guy, it's worth more. He doesn't have to pay more for it. So, mainly, the same thing over here. That simmer is not going to be worth the same amount since it's, you know, an odd one amongst the others, the family. So, therefore, and since he didn't plan it, that's the way it came out. That's the price tag, and it's not considered cheating. He's on the pasuk Divi Rivos Bisharecha. There was once these four business men. They had a meeting in a hotel lobby or whatever. So we'll call them Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. So they're sitting there, you know, discussing the things, and they have their cell phones on the table. So all of a sudden, Reuven had to go out to the bathroom, I don't know, whatever. He got up, and he had to leave for a minute. So he left his phone there on the table, and he left. So while he was gone, his phone rang, and so one of the guys there, let's say Yehuda, you know, sees the phone ringing, and he picks it up, and he sees on the screen, you know, my dear wife, I don't know whatever he named this his wife. So I saw that it was Reuven's wife calling, right? So he decided to play a prank on it. And as it happened, he was hoarse. His throat was hoarse, Yehuda, and so was Reuven. So it happened to be that day they sounded very, very similar. So he decided to play a prank. And he decided to pretend that he's Reuven, the husband. And he goes, yes, dear. You know. And she says, oh, yeah, hi, listen. She tells him, I'm at this store where they're selling these rugs, these oriental rugs, whatever, and I said, it's a great deal on this rug, it's like half price, only 5,000 shekels, and I want to know, is it okay, can I buy this rug, you know, for 5,000 shekels? And so he goes, yeah, sure, no problem, please do. And he goes, oh, wow, that's so nice of you, thank you so much, dear. Okay, great, I'm picking it up, bringing it home, great, thank you. And he hangs up. So then the Reuven comes back, not knowing what happened, of course, until he got home. He comes home and he sees his rug in the living room. He goes, what's this? She goes, what do you mean, what's this? This is the rug I bought. She goes, what do you mean, rug I bought? You rug I bought. You remember I told you 5,000 shekels? 5,000 shekels? She says, yeah, but I asked you. He goes, what do you mean you asked me? You didn't ask me anything. She goes, of course I did. You said, I asked you. You said, it's fine. He goes, I didn't. Big fight. Anyways, so Yehuda felt bad afterwards. And he asked the Shiloh, does he have to pay for the rug because of what he did? So the, you know, he disguised himself as Reuben. So, okay, so as far as paying for the rug, Pashtus, he doesn't have to pay for it. Why? Because it's like a grama, number one. And he, Lamaisa, Reuven did get a rug out of it. It's not like he stole anything from him. He you know, paid for a rug, and he got a rug, and so that it didn't, you know, he didn't lose anything. He got himself a rug. He paid for it, and he got himself a rug, and a good deal even. Okay. The only problem is that he wasn't interested in a rug. Okay, but that's still not really called that he stole anything from. That's as far as monetary, you know, stealing goes. But as far as other Isurim, he lists here five things he was over by doing such a thing. He says, first of all, Gnevas Das, by disguising himself as the husband. Second of all, Hafaras Shalom Bais, between Reuven and his wife. Three, the Tsar that he caused Reuven and his wife, probably similar to the second reason. The fourth thing is Leitzanus. Mr. Shari Tshuva says it's not a good thing to be a let's. And number five, Sicha Yimisha Zara. What was he doing? Schmoozing with this guy's wife. You know what I mean? Says in Pirkei Avos, Alter Sicha Yimisha. You know. Anyway, so it was not a good thing what he did over on five things, even though monetarily, okay, maybe he's going to have to pay. Next. Vaisa Imo Vakarbo Kolya Mechayev. It means here maybe not such a well-known story of Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, that's all, the former Rashiv of Torah Or. So his grandson, Rav Shimon Scheinen, tells the following. He says that his grandfather, Rav Scheinberg, he used to travel quite frequently to Chutz Lars to raise money for the yeshiva. And he used to have a minhag that he appointed this certain relative of his, same guy, every time we go, and he asked him to put an extra learning in his chus, because he knew that, he said, every time I go to chus it takes a toll on his learning, he can't learn as well, and you know, he's busy with this and with that, and it's very, it's his quality of learning goes down, Scheinberg. So therefore Scheinberg asked this guy if he can please learn extra while he's gone to for his chus, because have that extra Torah, you know, that he's missing out by being chus. So this relative faithfully every time Scheinberg left, he would put an extra hours of learning and for Scheinberg. Okay. So what happened? Eventually one day this relative of his passed away, Nifta. So the Almana came to Scheinberg with a request. Says, look, my husband, every time he went away, he would learn extra hours for you. You know, for you, because so now that he's no longer with us, he's in the next world, I would like to ask Rosh Hashiva if he could do some extra learning for my husband, you know, in return, for, you know, for, well, to Ilu Neshama, you know, this coming year, it's the first year, maybe the Rosh Hashiva can learn on him for his chus. So Scheinberg says, I would love to, but I can't. She's like, you can't, after all he's done for you, you know, you can't, why can't you? So listen to what he answers. He says, very simple, I'd love to, but I can't, he says, because I don't have an extra minute in the day. my schedule is so packed, and every minute I is accounted for. So I don't have 1 minute even that I have spare. So what can I do? Anyways, as you can understand, he was, he heard him to have to, you know, say that, and her, she wanted his chus. Anyways, the end of the story goes that he, Eichshu, somehow was able to squeeze out 5 minutes a day for a month in this person's chus. Okay. Next on the Pasuk Livelti Rum Levavo Merchav. This was a little short myself, the Chidushi Harim. He's the father of the Ger Hasidim, first Rebbe. And shows what humility is, that when his mother, the Chidushi Harim's mother, died, so he, at the Levaya, he wanted to ask her Mechila, right? So what did he say? He said the following to his mother. He says, until now, he says, Ima, you had nachas from me. Why? Because you thought that I was here in this world, you know, while you were alive. You thought that, oh, my son, he's a big tzaddik, or whatever. He says, but now you're in the next world. And now you see what the emes is. Now you see that I'm nothing. And, you know, it's causing you a lot of tzar up there. So I'd like to ask you, Mechila, for the tzar that I'm causing you up in Shemai. It's called a nafa. Another story from about Rav Shmuel Yitzchak Stern. Rav Shmuel Yitzchak Stern, who was he? He was a brother of the famous Rav Moshe Aaron Stern, who was the famous Mashkiach of Kamenetz, who they both of them were the grandson of Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman, the Alpha the Boss. Anyway, so Shmuel Yitzchak, he was a very big Baal Chesed. He started the three famous Mostos, the Beit Leplitos, the Kiryat Banot in Yerushalayim, and the famous Beit Hachlama Yoldot in Telstone. So the story goes that once he had a son in a certain school or whatever, and he gets called in from the Minahel one day, and Minahel says, I'm sending away your son. I don't want him in the school anymore. She was shocked because he didn't know anything. His son did anything so terrible. He deserved to be kicked out of school. But the Minahel's, no. And he didn't give any good reason, nothing, whatever. And just said, no, I don't want him in the school. Goodbye. And it really hurt. I mean, for what? Isn't, you know, when the kid get kicked out, it's not a pashna thing for the kid, you know, for the family, everything. And Shmuel, okay, you know, what can he do? The Minahel wouldn't listen. And he said, no, oh, goodbye. Take your son and go home. Okay, so in the end, later on, it was found, the Minahel found out himself that it was a big mistake what happened. And he, okay, but at that time, that's what happened. Kicked him out. So, what can he do? He goes, gets a son, and they get into the car and start to drive off. So just as they're pulling out from this in front of the school, he sees in his rear view mirror the Minahel running after him. So like, stop, waving, you know, you should stop with it. So what it went through his mind, he says, okay, you know, I understand. He's probably running at me, he feels bad. You know, because he kicked my son out, and even it was just not, you know, he's undeserving of this, and he wants to, you know, he feels bad, he's going to take him back. So he goes, okay, so he stops his car, and the Minahel comes up to the window, and what does he tell him? Not to bring his son back. He tells him something else. Listen to this. This is what we call the height of chutzpah. He says to Rabbi Shmuel Yitzchak, he says, listen, he says, in my office, now, after you left, you know, my office, a gvir came, this wealthy man, which I invited him over because I need this very, very large loan. I had to borrow a lot of money from. And he agreed, but he said, he'll only agree if I have a guarantor, a rev. So I said, okay, and I was naming him certain people. How about this person? How about that person? And this person? And every single person I mentioned, he said, no, they're not good enough. It's a lot of money. It's a, you know, it's a very large loan, and I need somebody I can rely on. And no. And just so happens, he happened to glance out of the door, and he sees you getting into the car, you know, with your son. And he said, listen, if this Rabbi Stern is the guarantor, no problem, I'll give you the money. So I want to know, can you come up and sign as a guarantor for this loan? Now, what would we have done in such a situation? We would have said, probably, take a hike. I mean, what do you mean? After what you did, you kick out my son for no good reason, and now you want me to sign as a guarantor for your loan? What, are you crazy? That's what we would have said, right? But not Rav Stern. He says, fine. He goes up, and afterwards, years later, when he was reminded of this incident, he says, you know, I remember he said, I didn't even look at the amount. Because I figured if I look at the amount, I probably wouldn't be able to omid b'nisayon. So I didn't even want to look. I signed without even looking how much it was. And he said, he signed for the loan. And not only that, but that wasn't the end of the story. The Menahel came back to him 2 weeks later and asked him to sign for another loan. And then he asked him again for a third loan, and a fourth loan, and a fifth loan. And each time he signed for him. So, Rabbi Zilberstein says that it's hard to imagine. He says, how could this Menahel even be lacking such tact? You know, to be able to do such a thing. I mean, have like chutzpah, you know, after kicking a minute ago, kicking him out, you know, your son out, and for no reason, and now asking him to be. So he said, Mistama Hashem put this in his mind in order to be a Nisayan for Stern. Because otherwise it's unexplainable. And for Hashem, he passed the test. Spoke about a humility. In his later days, they were discussing where he should, when his time comes to leave the world, where he should be buried, where he should have a kever. So somebody suggested, maybe it's Matim, next to your brother, Moshe Aaron Stern, you know, he should be next to your brother, be buried. So he said, no. I said, why? He says, me? I'm not worthy to be married, to be buried next to my brother, was it Sonny? Okay, we should be all zoiche to have a tremendous anava and all the other good midas that come along with it. And Hashem should answer all our tefillas. We should zoiche to the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, Yimhi Re'amein. Mm-hmm.